A salary is the drug they give you when they want you to forget about your dreams.
Welcome to the Corporate Dropout Podcast. I'm your host, Alessia Citro. If you're sick of the corporate hamster wheel and looking to feel inspired and empowered to live a high vibe life as your own boss, you're in the right place. Dare to drop out in 3, 2, 1. Before we start the show, I want to tell you about the business I'm launching. Do you have a business idea, but you don't know where to start? Or maybe you've started your own business, but you know there are boxes you need to check when it comes to taxes, finance, legal protection, marketing, and more. Same. That's why I founded Thea Collective. Named for the Greek goddess of light, Thea was created to light the path for entrepreneurs. We have the community, courses, and connections that will help every entrepreneur quantum leap and avoid costly mistakes. Learn from experts across professions and get the blueprint you need for your business. Text BIZ, that's B-I-Z, to 949-577-8709 or head to thea-collective.com to learn more. On today's episode, I interview John Malone and Greg O'Brien. They are certified tax coaches, as well as a lawyer and a CPA. We go through everything from their corporate dropout stories to things you definitely want to consider before taking on a business partner. And we wrap up with some tax planning strategies. John, Greg, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us. Happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Definitely excited to talk with your community about how we can help their businesses and minimize their tax burdens.
I think a lot of people listening to this show too are maybe in a corporate role now, but want to be their own boss and start their own business. And I have a feeling that this episode might push them more in that direction once they find out how much they can save on taxes when they're not an employee.
That's a very good point. I think people can open their eyes to the other side of the tax code, as we say. There's generally one set of the tax code that's made for employees, and then the other side of the tax code that's made for entrepreneurs and real estate investors. So if we can even enlighten you a little bit to what that looks like, I think it could be very helpful.
Yeah, I think it's something I never really knew about, and then my eyes were kind of open to it. I mean, certainly, I don't think that should be the reason why you leave your job just for for tax reasons, but those benefits certainly follow any entrepreneur, which is something that everyone should know about.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So being that this is the Corporate Dropout Podcast, let's start there. I would love to hear more about your professional careers, how they started, and how you became corporate dropouts. So whoever wants to go first,
yeah,
give us the tea.
I'll take it. So Greg O'Brien, I grew up in a small town outside of Boston here, where John and I's paths first collided. So we went to a school called Bentley out here, which is about a 5,000 or so person school, solely business focused. So it's a business school. They're mainly known for accounting. So went there. John and I played football together at Bentley, so became really good friends there. And I, at that time, was interested in numbers. So I went the accounting route. So majored in accounting at Bentley and went on to stay there for an extra couple of years to get my master's in taxation. So did that. And when I graduated, I took a job at a traditional public accounting firm. So think of a small version of a PwC or KPMG, about 100-person firm or so. And that was a really good experience. It was closely held. There was 4 local owners in on that business and about 75 to 100 people, depending on the time of year. So really learned a lot there as far as how does the world work with tax stuff? How does it work with the accounting stuff? Saw a lot of interesting people, was involved in some projects with some pretty famous people. So got to just really see how the other side, operates. So eye-opening to me at a very young age of, okay, this is how the tax system works. This is how wealthy people manage their money. And at that point, I really got the idea of, you just really need to learn from other people and not reinvent the wheel. So really eye-opening couple of years I spent there. But many in that industry and that model get burnt out. So I can't say I was burnt out after 2 years of my career, but I kind of got sick of that lifestyle. It was oftentimes 6 days a week, late nights, weekends. So, I had the syndrome of the grass is greener. At that point, I left and I took a pivot stayed in the financial, in the accounting world, but I went into real estate and was at a smaller company here in Massachusetts that focused on real estate development, especially like shopping centers. So, and I was on the numbers side of that, the financial side of that. That was a really pivotal point in my career as well, because at that point, I realized that I really liked real estate. You know, like you don't learn much about real estate in school, even in business school. That's all more focused on, you know, financial stuff, stock market, things like that. So learned how real estate really works from an investment level. So I did that for about 4 years at two different companies. My boss from one company took me to another company, but I did that for a while. I loved real estate. I had nothing bad to say about it. I did like my jobs per se, but then in about late 2016, early 2017, I went through a lot of personal self-development, listened to a lot of Tony Robbins stuff, just got into podcasts, listened to everything and anything. And I kind of had that feeling. I'm like, I feel like I shouldn't be doing what I'm doing right now. And I had been coincidentally along the way helping friends and family with taxes and just basic stuff with my education. And I kind of started thinking, you know, I could probably do this myself and kind of leave the corporate world. And at that time, I can't say I had like this vision of what we are now, but I did think, hey, you know what? I think I've seen all these other people do it. You know, I'm just as qualified as them. Why can't I do it? So once that was made up in my mind, there was no turning back. And at that time, the company I was at was a publicly traded company. It was a bigger company. I was definitely on a ladder, middle manager financial world. Like I saw where I was going. I knew exactly how many years it was going to take to get there. So I put a plan in place. I, kind of talked to my advisor on my side, including John. I talked to other people I trust in my life, and I really created an exit plan. And what I did was I picked a date. I said, I am exiting this role no later than August 31st of 2018. And I didn't put any pressure on myself, though. I said, whenever I feel it's right. So in July, at some point, I woke up on a Thursday. I just said, today's the day. I'm doing it. Cause I didn't want that build up to doing it. So I went in and, you know, fumbled through it. And they were like, wait, what? You're just starting your own business? Like, we didn't know you were going to do that. So, and the rest is history. I look back on that now. It's kind of funny. But I, at that time, I said, you know, I don't even have a perfect plan in place, but I do know I have some skills and I have a big network and I can do this if I put my mind to it. So, I gave a, you know, 2 weeks notice kind of thing. And then reality set in that the next month that rent was going to be on me. So, that was my story. So it was a whirlwind, but now looking back at it, you know, I kind of question why it took so long.
Yeah. So for me, I guess I'll pick up kind of post-college because Greg kind of took care of that. So we did go to college together, but I went a different route. I went to law school kind of on a whim. I didn't really have a reason for doing it. I just kind of thought it would be a good idea. And it's not like I had the resources to do it or anything like that. I just decided to do it. And I went at night. There's a program in the Boston area that you could do it at night at one of the schools. So I could work during the day, kind of get some practical experience in the law and make some money so I could, you know, pay for my way through law school. But again, like didn't really have a clear vision as to why I was doing it, like what the end game was going to be. I just thought, hey, maybe this is a good education. And it ultimately was. I think, you know, I learned a lot more in law school than I did kind of any other source of education in my life, because it was, you know, my ass was on the line to some extent to kind of to kind of produce for it. So I'm thankful for that. I think I probably wanted to end up at a big firm or something that, you know, had like a high salary to start. I think that's a lot of prospective law school students have that kind of ambition. Looking back on it now, I'm thankful that, you know, I was kind of led in a different path. But I went and worked after I graduated law school. I went and worked for a litigation firm with a close friend of mine. It was certainly fun, you know, kind of building the business with him. But I found that my passion wasn't really in that litigation world. It was more for business, for entrepreneurs, for helping people build businesses. And that's kind of, I think, part of my story is just you know, finding what you're passionate about and then just kind of having tunnel vision and heading towards it. So obviously, you know, I'm close with Greg and we saw that we had a lot of synergies, certainly in our mindset, both business and personal on those levels, and just like how we can help people and how we can service this industry. And he had kind of already built a very solid base, and it was just something that I really wanted to be a part of. So I jumped out myself, and you know, it's been extremely rewarding on multiple levels ever since.
Yeah, isn't it nice to just not answer to anyone except, well, each other as co-CEOs, but you know, not having that boss, it just alleviates so much stress, in my opinion anyway. Would you agree with that?
It does. What I always tell people is it changes your perspective on things because you do not have to answer someone anymore. But you also have a lot of responsibilities, right? Like we've now grown to a firm of 18 people. And what now causes stress is more of, hey, we need to take care of these people right there. It's kind of like crazy how life changes real fast. Like that was something that was not even on the radar 4 years ago. And now we have, you know, hey, we're going to make sure that everyone here is taken care of. They're happy. We're supporting them. We're supporting their families, things like that. So it's kind of becomes less about you, in my opinion, and more about other people. So not having to, but being able to pivot on a whim is very freeing. There's not as much red tape to go through, right? You got to vet your ideas out, but you know, if I want to zig and zag tomorrow, we can zig and zag tomorrow. So, it's definitely a life-changing event when you do that, but then I think your perspective changes, as well.
Yeah, I would definitely echo what Greg said. I mean, I think, there's definitely a sense of, I don't want to call it a burden, but there's so much more responsibility. But by the same token, for me, it's not about answering to somebody. It's just being able to kind of go after the opportunities that we're aligned and going after. You know, you don't have to get approval. You know, if there's something that you feel passionate about that you want to jump on, we can do that, which I think is very important. And I think is a big part of being successful too, is kind of jumping on some of those things.
Yeah, that's well said. I think the freedom aspect of owning your own thing is, nothing else quite like it. So Greg, I want to go back to you. And when you left this job that you were in and you thought, well, why hadn't I done this sooner? Did you set anything in place in terms of like starting the business before that? You talked a little bit about an exit plan. I'm curious how that went and how you were able to do that.
Actually, yeah, that's a great question. So a few things happened there. So that summer when I was planning, what my original plan was, and I'm so thankful this ever happened, but originally the plan was I was going to purchase an existing company. In this industry, there's a lot of retiring baby boomer business owners, firm owners that are trying to exit. So there's a market where these businesses trade. So I looked at one and there was a lot of warning signs there. And I said, you know what though, like it would just be easier to start with with revenue than not with revenue, and you can get it financed. But John and our other good friend Wade, they looked at it and they said, this is not a good deal. So ended up not going through with it. And that was a blessing in disguise because we were able to grow a lot quicker by creating our own thing and choosing our clients versus just inheriting someone else's work, right, as they retired. So that was the first plan. Luckily, that didn't happen. The second thing that we did, I actually went through the process because I thought it was important, my business kind of school mentality. I wrote a formal business plan out. I crossed my T's, dotted my I's, because I wanted to prove to myself that this is viable on paper first. And I did that. And I look back at today and we blew away what we thought we could do. But I wanted to prove myself, hey, there's a market for what we want to do. There's enough clients we want to do. There's the right client, the right opportunity here. So I did a formal business plan. And the other thing that I did to get started is I just kind of side hustled and was doing anything you think of on the cold outreach. I was finding magazines in our city of new businesses that were formed, cool businesses, people that are creating like protein bars and energy drinks, local, immediately reaching, finding their email addresses, reaching out to them. And to this day, some of them are still our clients and they've grown to be big businesses. But that was how I started. I mean, it's not easy to just jump in and like people just don't show up at your door looking to be your client. So I went to the kind of the method of when I'm starting, I wanted to have a little bit of a base built up. So my summer of side hustling, I didn't start from ground zero when I went out. I had 5 or 6 clients that I was winging on the side after hours, nights and weekends. So I felt like, okay, if all else fails, I do have a little bit of revenue coming in here from these people. And why I'm glad I did this is those people ultimately referred me to so many of their business colleagues and other businesses I could work with at that time.
So yeah, I mean, I look back on that and I'm just very glad that that's the path I went, because it was not as clear back then of how things were going to trend. So I thought, hey, maybe an acquisition's a little bit easier. It's what a lot of people told me to do. But the stars did not align, and that's a good thing.
I love the fact that you side hustled to have income coming in on the side so that you didn't just like leap out of the nest with no net. I mean, anyone listening to this, if you want to quit your job, do something on the side to get money coming in. Otherwise, you're going to get desperate. You're going to sell out. It's going to be very stressful instead of enjoyable. So that is great advice right there.
Yeah, I'm going to say I second that. I mean, I've mentored some younger CPAs before that have started like that. And when you said desperate, that's very true. People will make bad deals or bad business deals because they're desperate. You're not going to be, you know, at the top of the mountain when you first start. But if you have a little bit of something to fall back onto, you're not going to take everything and anything, even if it's terrible for you. So I look back at that, and that was definitely a good thing to do, is have just a little bit coming in so I could figure out what I needed to do and make sure the bills are paid.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing too, about when you get desperate, it's like that line from Anchorman, that desperation is a stinky cologne. It's like, you are not going to attract the type of clients that you want to work with if that's the vibe you're putting out there. So yeah, well said. So John, in addition to being a co-CEO of GoCPA, you also own your own law firm. So can you tell us a little bit about how you got that started up, what that transition was like leaving the firm that you were at before?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think it was something, it follows what I was saying, you know, a bit earlier, that like my passion and where the certain client base that I wanted to serve and the people that I think I could provide the most value add, we're not really in that like litigation space. So more business owners, entrepreneurs, real estate investors, you know, people that are kind of similarly situated to me. I think I could relate to them more on a business and a personal level. So the transition was certainly tough because it was something that I had done for the last like 7 to 10 years being in that other field. But kind of like Greg, I don't want to call it a side hustle, but I had serviced, I had been engaged with a number of business owner clients, a lot of mutual clients with Greg at the time, just kind of proving the concept to me that it's something that A, I was passionate about, and B, you know, this is something that I could do. It's one of those things that just kind of builds up inside you, and you just realize that you're going in that direction, whether you like it or not. Regardless of how scary it is, it's going to happen. So you just kind of let go of the rope and let the chips fall where they may. So I opened up the law firm. So I can service various legal needs of clients. And then, you know, also there was just so many synergies with Greg and what we do on the tax side that, you know, it just made sense to join forces there. So, again, I think it was certainly something that is scary for anybody. But I believed in what I was doing and what I could do. And it's the best decision that I've ever made.
Yeah. You have to have so much confidence to go out on your own. And I feel like that's the part that maybe people underestimate a little bit. So like, you gotta have a lot of self-belief before you jump out, or it can be scarier than it needs to be.
Oh, totally. I think it's always going to be scary, right? Even if you're like super confident, I don't think anybody that, I'll pick on Wade, because Wade's a super confident dude. I don't think it's something that you can just say that there's no fear in it. Right. I mean, there's going to be fear. But I think if you do believe in yourself and you stay the course, you'll be able to make something.
If someone says that they have no fear going out on their own, they're lying. Let me ask you, both of you, have you had any oh shit moments since you left? And do you want to share if there are any that come to mind?
Good question. So I can honestly, I've never had buyer's remorse from leaving the corporate world ever since day one. To the other point, the oh shit moments of that kind of stuff happen a lot. So when you're running the business, like we are in a business where like part of our days are like tacticians, right? We're helping people with like pretty nuanced stuff. But a lot of it too is like, I didn't go to school for marketing, for management, for human resources, right? That is learning on the fly. So yes, there are human resource issues that come up all the time that is like, oh shit, how do we deal with this? I didn't know that was a thing. So, and that doesn't necessarily give me energy, but it's part of the life. So, that stuff does happen. Things come up in the business world that I'm surprised by all the time that slip through the cracks. It's just unfortunate. But I think what we have learned is that you can't let those things get you down either, because everyone makes mistakes. Everyone has those moments where they're like, I can't believe I forgot to do that. It happens. It's just about kind of picking up the pieces and learning from it. And one thing we tell our team a lot is, you know, mistakes are going to happen, and kind of want you to make mistakes because you'll learn from them. But how do you prevent it from happening again, right? If there's a fire, figure out a way to make sure that's fireproof next time. Put something in place. So, yeah, but I don't have any regrets ever of leaving that world. And I think, like John said before, once that's in your gut and you have that feeling, there is no looking back. And I had met somebody in my transition to the out of the corporate world that he said that to me. He said, you have too many feelings already of leaving. He's like, you're screwed. There's no turning back. And it's so true. Once that's in your gut, there is no turning back.
It's such a learning curve, isn't it? And I'm curious too, do you all have sort of like a rule of thumb for when you decide, okay, I'm going to unenroll from the school of hard knocks and just pay someone who's an expert at this versus me trying to spend time figuring it out?
Totally. I mean, we always think about how can we outsource more or even insource it too. So we definitely look at the core competencies of our team. Not everyone on our team is like necessarily an accountant or a lawyer or a CPA. There's business people too. So we'll look at some people and say, you know what? Their management skills are better to deal with, say, payroll, right? Something like that internally than ours. It sucks our energy. We're not good at it. Let's insource this to somebody else. There's also times where we may say, hey, you know what? We need help on these certain tasks and we'll outsource it. We believe in outsourcing. The other thing that we're big into too is coaching. So we have a business coach that we work with throughout the year. I have two business coaches, like all about that. To me, that's investing in the business and investing in yourself. And we've gotten a lot out of that kind of stuff. So we're always looking for ways to take things off our plate that take our energy and find someone else that's good at them. We've done an exercise before that's called XDS, which means, cut, delegate, or systemize. And the way we do that is, we kind of go through a week and say, let's write down everything we did this week. What can we cut because it's just unnecessary? What can we delegate either internally or externally? And what can we create some type of system for to streamline this and kind of cut the time out? So we're always trying to refine. But, you know, as you grow, just more things come up so that you'll never get that list completely empty. But you got to work on that kind of stuff because otherwise it'll all fall to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. I love the XDS thing. I'm going to copy that.
Yeah, it's a good exercise that we've used. And I think it's not just a one-time thing, like Greg said. It's something that, you know, you can even evaluate that on a monthly basis, right? To just see if you're using your time in the most efficient and valuable places, right? I'm sure anyone can make a laundry list of the things that they're doing, and you can realize that, you know, they're low-level tasks that you're spending a lot of time with. And sometimes we just revert to doing those things because they're the easiest things. And then we're leaving, or it's low hanging fruit, and we're leaving kind of the things that actually take the thinking and the higher level tasks, and we're pushing them to the end of the list when those are probably the main revenue generators, right? I think also a rule of thumb I was thinking is when we outsource stuff is probably when I get like the 6th, 7th email from Greg peppering me about something, or his head's about to explode. That's probably a good barometer to move on from it. But, no, I think we're always evaluating our systems and the things that we do. And I think that that's important, right? It's just to kind of keep a pulse on those things. So, you know, you can outsource them. And when you do outsource them effectively, it's like the best feeling in the world.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And especially if it's stuff that you don't like doing, if it's an energy leak, like just get it off your plate.
Yeah, get it out of here.
So the next thing I want to ask you about, I find it fascinating that your co-CEOs, I feel like it would have to just be like, almost like a perfect marriage to find someone that you could be a co-CEO with. So tell us a little bit about how you decided to come together and how you are able to operate the business hand in hand, because I think that for most people, that would be pretty challenging.
Certainly. So the first thing is, I think the way this business is structured, so a traditional kind of accounting CPA business advisory firm, they're structured as partnerships, right? So there might be 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, and someone like PwC has hundreds of partners. And the partners all kind of operate in like silos, right? They share the staff, but ultimately the way those partnerships work are that each person kind of has their own book of business, their own clients, and they just share in the servicing of them. It's a very old school model, and I've never liked that because it just doesn't feel like a good team atmosphere. People kind of operate independently. So we, from a perception standpoint, we didn't want to be called partners, right? So someone gave us the idea of, hey, you know what, like in the tech world, there are some people that will have multiple CEOs, right? So we kind of threw things around. We thought about, do you want to do president and CEO, COO, CEO, like, it doesn't really matter to us. But then we kind of decided on, we like the idea of co-CEO. And how we've kind of structured it internally is that we're very much similar people, but we also have different strengths. So John is way better at some of the details and some of like the operational train running. I'm a little bit better at the high level ideas and kind of, you know, where we want to be type of thing. So we've been able to delegate like those CEO level tasks based on our strengths. And if a new thing comes up, we know, we kind of naturally know who should be running with this project. If there's any indecision at all, we just kind of talk about it and say, okay, hey, this is going to be delegated to you or me, because this one's going to give me a bit more energy. So it works well because we, you know, we're on the same page, but we also make sure we understand, you know, which balls are in which person's court. I think that really helps. And we try to operate our days and our weeks intentionally. So it's not like we're both running around on different pages. We're meeting all the time with each other and with our team. So we always feel like we're clicking on the same page.
And I think too, I think our relationship is a bit unique in terms of coming together as co-CEOs. We went to school together. We've known each other for, you know, 15 years. You know, we were captains together on our college football team, and we'd been in business together before. So I think leveraging all those experiences can just promote or at least lead to, you know, a higher success rate there, you know? So I think that that's something that we have that a lot of people probably don't. And then I think, like Greg said, you know, I think we do have two different skill sets, which complement each other. Greg likes to call himself the visionary, and likes to pin me as the integrator, which is like, sounds so lame, but I think it's true. It's more important. Yeah. It's from a book called Traction that we both read that, you know, usually in a partnership, there is a visionary and an integrator, someone that kind of moves the train, someone that kind of, and also like has a lot of the visions for the business. And as reluctant as I am to kind of give him credit for that, I think it is true. And I think we just, you know, we try to have the communication channels open. That sounds lame too, but it's true. And, you know, because as an organization, we're a virtual organization too. It's so important to have everybody rowing in the same direction. And that's a little challenging when you're not in a physical kind of brick and mortar space where you've seen everybody personally every single day. You know, you need to have a lot of the systems and processes in place. So everyone is rowing in that same direction. And that definitely starts at the top, right? You have to have that at the top to do it. And I think we're both committed to it. There's a high level of commitment on both ends. Which I guess maybe some organizations take for granted, and we certainly don't.
Yeah, great answers there. So I couldn't agree more. Finding the complementary partner, like you can't have the same skill set. You have to your point, like one be the visionary, one be the integrator. Otherwise, it doesn't work. I'm curious too. So I actually had to make a difficult decision to move forward with my new business without the person I had been intending to go into partnership with. And I was reading statistics on this recently, and it's that 70% of business partnerships end up being dissolved. What advice would you give for the listener who's considering going into business with someone? Like, outside of what you've talked about, is there anything that absolutely should be a red flag or that you would look for? Or, what would you say to someone who's considering taking on a partner?
Yeah, I would say first and foremost, you got to make sure that you guys have the same vision. So for example, if one partner, their vision is, hey, let's just make a lot of money, let's do the best we can, let's do this for the next 30 years. And the other partner's like, yeah, let's make a lot of money, but let's get out of this and sell it in 5 years. That's going to fail because they're going to, as John said before, they're going to row in separate directions. So you got to make sure the vision is right to start. The second thing is definitely don't just jump into it off of a whim. Like we have clients come in sometimes that have that thing like, oh, I met this guy at a conference and he has a good skill set. We're going to create a partnership. It's like, well, how well do you really know them? Right. Because like you said, it is a business marriage. There's financial commitments there. There is long-term issues there as well. So you got to make sure that, you know, I would never jump into a partnership if you didn't know the person, without vetting it for months and months and months, if not longer. The second thing is make sure this is kind of now us talking on the business side, but you want to make sure that stuff's all structured properly. Each person has adequate protections if things don't go well. Because like you said, there are a lot of failures in partnerships. And going back to the points before, I think that can be because it's not understood what each person is going to be doing necessarily. So if both people were just like these pie in the sky vision people, and they just were just throwing ideas off the wall all day, likely nothing's going to get done, right? They're just going to talk about the new idea every day, and no one's actually moving those ideas forward. So you do got to find someone that has a unique skill set that shares your vision, but it's a different skill set. So from our experiences of seeing other people and having dealt with people that have exited partnerships, you just really got to take your time and really think about it. Is this someone you want to be involved with every single day of your life, including the weekends, for the next several years, right? So the business never sleeps. There's going to be issues on Sundays and Saturdays. So think about it like that. And if you have any hesitations about that person, then any hesitations at all, it's probably not a good idea.
That is such good advice. I told this partner, would-be partner, I'm like, I look at business partnership as like a marriage. And if it's not amazing while you're dating, it is not going to get any better once you're like married and in it. So we're dating and we need a breakup type of thing. So I think that that's good advice. John, what would you say?
Yeah. I mean, that metaphor it's definitely rings true. I think, if I were to like name some things that should be evaluated kind of at the forefront, I mean, I do think that, your personal goals have to line up, like personal and business kind of have to be aligned. And certainly on the business end, like you want to be laser focused on, what your 1-year vision, 3-year vision, 10-year, whatever kind of benchmarks that you're using, that you're aligned in those goals, right? Because you don't want to be one person's going after something and the other person's going after something completely different. So I think that's huge. And just that you have that same level of commitment. You hear these stories of, hey, I partnered up with this guy, but he's not pulling his weight. I mean, that's like, we hear that maybe once a month from a client, that comes into our company. So, just knowing what their level of motivation commitment is huge. And I knew that, I knew that about Greg. I've known that about him. So it was something that, was kind of easy for us. And I think Greg also noted if you're not dialed in on those things, and if the business value goes up and somehow you have some success, but at the partnership level, it's disruptive. It's only going to get harder to get out, and it's only going to get harder to split up. And we have those complete disasters come into our office too. And they're terrible situations. There's a lot of money at stake. There's a lot of ramifications at stake, and they're not easy to unravel.
Yeah, great advice. So anyone who's thinking about taking on a partner, listen back to this and make sure that you're checking off every box when it comes to this potential. Yeah, I keep wanting to say like spouse, because it really is that entrenched. I mean, and to your point, you might be having to do this on weekends too. So you got to really have a good fit there. Yeah, so let's pivot.
Sorry, I was going to say, Johnson, the commitment part, that is the big thing, right? Because like you might bring on a partner, say, that just thinks this is great, we're going to be together, but it's like a 9-to-5 type job, like all good. But they may not want to have that extra commitment level. And I think that's probably one of the first things to that, right? Like, hey, are you all in, right? Not partially, and you're all into this. And if they're like, well, except for like these 2 months of the year, I got to like travel, not going to work. It'll create friction. So that's a really good point by John.
Yeah. And resentment too. Like if the level of commitment and the level of action is not the same, like it just, not good. So pivoting a little bit, let's close up with some tax stuff. So we're going to dive into this more in the mini episode, but I really want to hear how everyone listening can give less money to Uncle Sam. And I alluded to this in the beginning, but I met with our CPA last week and my mind was blown by how much business ownership versus being a W-2 employee is now going to change our tax situation. So can you give us some high level of ways that you help clients reduce their tax bill and some of the benefits around business ownership versus being a W-2 employee?
Sure. So I think we'll start with just kind of like the theory behind it all. So if you think about why the tax system is what it is, there are reasons behind it. Like the tax system comes out of laws that have been passed since the 1920s and they get evolved. But the theories have always stayed the same. And those theories are that the tax system for an employee is pretty straightforward for the most part. But for a business owner, there's all lists and thousands of pages of incentives. The reason the incentives exist is because the government wants people to start businesses. They want innovation. They want to keep being the best economy in the world. So how do you do that? You incentivize people with ways through the tax code. Same thing goes for real estate investors. So people will often get into real estate as a secondary thing to their business. And the government, again, the government doesn't want to be spending their own money and resources building apartments and building homes for people to rent. They want people to do that. They want people to own those and rent them out. It's an easier thing. The government's not good at building. So there's tax incentives that it always existed there. So the first thing we do when we're talking to someone that's new into business is we want them to think about the tax system as a book of incentives versus a book of rules. There are more things really in the tax code of saying what you can do versus you can't do. So think of it with that mindset, because if you just approach taxes like, oh, I'm going to get screwed this year and next year. No, you got to think about how do I rearrange my life to get these incentives, right? So some of them aren't that difficult. So an easy thing, if people aren't quite into business yet, like we said at the beginning, well, go try business. Go try whatever your craft is as a side hustle. That side hustling itself is a business. That gives you rights now to deduct certain things that you cannot deduct as a W-2 employee. So just by you going and selling one unit of you're good on Amazon or selling that one session with your potential client, you are now in business. Even if you don't have an LLC or a corporation, you're now in business. You now have the same rights, the same deductions, the same credits as someone else can get that's in business. So the first thing is, just get into business, try something, because I think your eyes will be open then. Okay, this is how it works on that front. And then once you kind of figure that out, then you get into the more sophisticated structuring, how you structure things. These niche tax credits that exist for certain industries, especially people that innovate. Then we, get into real estate and how real estate works in the tax code. Then your eyes will be open. But my opinion is, if you're at W-2 right now and you're thinking about taking a leap, go try it, because you trying it is business, right? You are operating a business at that point. And just get some general advice of what you can and can't do at that point. And I think you'll be kind of amazed of what you can deduct and what you can do as a business owner.
I love the reframe around it being a book of incentives instead of rules and regulations. That is such a great shift. Love that. John, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I was going to say, after you kind of reframe that in your mind too, and you're already kind of in, and now you are a business owner versus kind of an employee, you already have in and of itself, a lot of potential benefits and incentives to follow. But then the next step, which Greg alluded to, is, okay, like entity selection, how should my entity be taxed? And there's a number of different considerations for each type of entity, whether you're going to operate as a sole proprietor or a single member LLC, a partnership, an S corporation, a C corporation. All have their different benefits and potential downsides depending on what you're doing and what the end goal is. I think that there's so many different variables to be analyzed from both a tax and legal perspective, but I think everybody should be analyzing that through the lens of, okay, what do I want to do with this business? Do I want to operate this business into the ground for the rest of my life? Do I want to ultimately sell this business? What's my horizon? And there are a lot of different potential tax benefits for each entity structure, but all of it needs to be fully vetted to see if it's right for you and your business.
Yeah, I love that. I think anyone listening to who is still W-2'd to Greg's point, like start your side hustle because that will open up write-offs. Even, I mean, I'm a huge fan of network marketing. That's been the thing that opened my eyes to entrepreneurship and really got me running in that direction. But yeah, just doing anything and meeting with a CPA, or it sounds like even a tax coach would be a good place to start just to see how much it might change your situation. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Just take that first leap there, and you don't need to go crazy, right? But just start proving your concept, and then that will allow you to get into this kind of second tax system.
I don't know if you can give this advice on air, but is there sort of like a magic number or a tax bracket that when people get into it, they really ought to find some shelters? What would you say around that, well, if you can?
Yeah, generally that's kind of like the entity structuring part of it. So the first thing with that is you don't really ever want the tax tail to wag the dog, meaning the first and primary reason you would form an entity around anything is for legal protection. So to make sure that you don't hurt yourself and the business doesn't hurt you, your assets are protected. So that's the first thing. But when you get into it, yes, there are different techniques through entities that can save you. As a general rule of thumb, widely depends on situations, but when you start approaching net incomes of, you know, $60,000-$70,000, that's when you should definitely be talking to a professional, because that's when you might want to explore creating an entity or changing the entity that you're in, because that's when your ROI is going to be best, right? Because there's going to be cost to forming things and doing things. But from just our experience, that's where you'll start seeing an ROI and what you're going to get really pay someone to the savings you'll get in return. So again, you know, everyone has different life situations, but that's kind of what we've seen along the way.
John, anything that you were going to add?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I mean, I think that's probably the number or in that area, like Greg said, you know, certainly dependent on the specific situation. But I think that's where you're going to find the most return on your investment, right? Because there's going to be added compliance. There's going to be added, like Greg said, filings and things of that nature. So that's probably a good time where at that same time, you've probably proved your concept and proved that it's something that you're going to actually follow through on too, right? Also, you want to make sure that it's something that you're going to want to do into the future. So I think that's important too. And I think one thing to kind of add to what Greg said about, you know, the tax bill being a book of incentives, you know, after when you do start to grow and scale, you know, one of the things that we always stress is just being proactive with your tax professional, with your service providers, to make sure that you're capturing every opportunity in a proactive manner. You know, you can't really do anything on December 31st that's that material and that's not really going to move the needle. You need to be kind of having this in the, you know, looking forward and planning and executing throughout the year in order to make a difference. Because, you know, obviously your taxes are your biggest expense. It's going to cut into your income in the most significant way, aside from everything else. So being able to optimize that is huge.
Yeah. Well said. Plan ahead. Don't wait till the end of the year like we have in the past, and then you get real burned. So, well, thank you both so much for coming on. Can you tell the listeners what you're going to be talking about in the business tip mini episode that we record after that? And then also how they can find and connect with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to talk kind of about, as an entrepreneur, you're first starting, how to think about your entity and tax structuring, and some questions you might want to ask the person that's helping you.
Pretty much just to follow up on some of the things that we just discussed. And you can find us both at our website on gotaxplanning.com. That's gotaxplanning.com.
Well, thank you so much and looking forward to the episode. So see us back here tomorrow. This episode was brought to you by Thea Collective, the learning community I founded for entrepreneurs. Text biz, that's BIZ, to 949-577-8709 or head to thea-collective.com. That's theia-collective.com to learn more. Thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed today's episode, please help me get the word out about The Corporate Dropout by screenshotting and sharing this on social. I would appreciate it so much if you would subscribe and leave a 5-star rating and review as well. And I do this show for you, and I want to hear from you. So tell me, what is it that you want more of? text me at 949-541-0951 or slide into the DMs at Corporate Dropout Official or Alicia Citro with two underscores. Until next time.